This is Side Hustle with Luke and Omar. We'll explore what it takes to run a side hustle with talented individuals from different backgrounds and experiences. We will discuss things like taking the plunge, personal challenges, and the balancing act of maintaining a day job whilst side hustling to make the dream a reality. Now sit back, relax, as we talk to some of these amazing individuals. Welcome everyone to another episode of Side Hustle with Luke and Omar. Today we have a special guest in the building, Mr. Jordan Astra. How you doing, man?
Doing very well. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for coming through. We understand it's a cold Wednesday night evening, and that we really appreciate you coming through, man. Luke, what's been going on with you, man?
It's been a pretty good week, actually. I got Friday off this week because I didn't take Australia Day. So I got a mystery day off on Friday, which is just amazing. I found out about that yesterday.
So nice.
Pretty cool about that, and just drinking some beer, and can't wait to get this recording happening.
And just chilling out.
Cool. Yeah, safe to say you're living the dream if you get Fridays off. That's a long weekend.
Pretty much, yeah. And then that's two public holidays this month, right? Because we've got another one, Queen's birthday or whatever.
You got to love Australia, eh?
Yeah, for sure. There's too many public holidays in comparison to where I come from, so.
Too many or?
Too many.
What do you mean?
I mean, it's a good thing, but just motherfuckers need to do some work.
That's the whole reason why we're here. Talk about doing work.
Exactly. Hey, man, do you want to just give us a quick Jordan Astra type spiel and just give us a breakdown of who you are and your background a little bit?
This is the elevator pitch.
This is the elevator pitch. Yeah. Exactly.
All right. Originally from Canada, born and raised in Toronto, Canada, represent. Moved down here about 7 years ago, and I started really just deciding probably about 3 years ago that music was going to be my thing. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to pursue it as a career. And the goal since then has been making music my full-time position. Mm. So this is obviously perfect to talk about it tonight. It's all about the transition from what I'm doing on the daily and making music and being one of the best artists of this generation.
Yeah, definitely. Amazing. That's a...
Hire me.
that's awesome, man. I mean, this entire medium is just to really get to understand what that transition looks like, and we all have kind of side things happening, and it'd be great if you can kind of talk us through what you're currently doing as your, you know, 9 to 5, and then we can kind of plug back into your upbringing and childhood and get to know you a little bit more on a deeper level,
find out if I got daddy issues or anything.
Yeah, totally.
I came for the podcast, and then the next thing, it's a full psychology,
it's like
session.
A therapy session.
But it's free, so that's good. I got a coffee out of it. So what do you want to know?
Man. Just talk us through kind of what is your 9 to 5 profession at the moment? Like what pays the bills for you at the moment?
Yeah. So I work for a creative agency out of Fitzroy called Apparition Media. Mm-hmm. We specialize in hand-painted murals, much like the billboards that you see on a freeway, except what we do is hand-painted.
That's really cool.
So probably definitely the largest in Australia, not the only ones to do it anymore. Mm. Mm-hmm. But we paint about 250 murals a year.
Yeah. Wow.
Awesome.
And I take care of, I'm their sales director.
Cool. And are those government funded, or is it just contracts from all over the place?
So our agency, we work predominantly with global clients, your Nikes.
Yeah. Dope.
A lot of video games, lots of movies. Roadshow Pictures, one of our great clients of ours. So we work directly with media buyers, and they're the ones who are spending clients' monies, if you're unfamiliar what a media buyer does. Mm-hmm. And basically we've got a great opportunity to do a whole different types of creative, and you know, some of it is a bit blasé, other times it's really exciting, and they get us to design it as well.
Yeah.
So there's great diversity in what we get to advertise.
That's awesome.
That's cool. So from your role, thinking about with talking to the media buyers and capturing that brief type thing, do you then also work with the creatives to sort of fulfill that project as well?
It depends really specifically on the actual campaign. But I think the majority of what we do is that a client as big as Nike or Coca-Cola, for example, will have this grasp on what they already want. They've got their vision painted.
Yeah.
And we're kind of the experiential side of what agencies provide, if you will. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the time they'll say, look, this is the idea that we've got. Can you expand on it? How do we make it more localized?
Okay.
And so they're really hitting us up for that next level.
Like if Nike was releasing a sneaker, for example, like a campaign, Air Max Day. Exactly. Yeah. Did you guys work on that?
Yeah. So we, as an example, would work with them really closely on Air Max Day. Mm. And their brief to us is always, all right, how do we make it better this year? It's the same thing every time. How do we make it big and better? And that's why we're hitting you guys up. And for us, it's like, we'll just get a bigger and better wall. Let's just do something that's really bespoke. Let's get in touch with local street artists. Let's make the pieces unique. But, and then the challenge being still consistent with the overall campaign.
So what does that process kind of look like? So to thinking about hiring the street artists and finding the location and even just the collaboration with Nike, which is amazing in itself. Like, how does that that process kind of look?
It's pretty straightforward, and it's less complicated than someone might imagine. What we end up doing is it's a lot of just catching up with people like us, our age, like-minded individuals who work at these media agencies. A lot of these global clients, obviously, you're not dealing with them directly, so there is a chain of command. And we deal with them directly. So it's a lot of the time, it's just catching up over lunches, us bribing them with food and just being like, you know, here we are. And then when the briefs come in, it's just literally, this is what we want to do. This is where we want to target. What do you got? And if that's just not enough, then we just say, okay, well, why don't we get other people involved? So a lot of time we can collaborate with global artists, local street artists as well. But for the most part, we have about 12 street artists that work with us that are traditionally taught in our methods of of street painting. But have their own side hustles, if you will. So these artists all have their own
Freelance type artists, and they've got you as a
so
client.
They keep it very separate. But they you're approaching Apparition Media for the sake of you've got an idea, you've got a brief. And then if you want to explore our artists, then that's when you get the social media influence. What can they bring to the table? Do you like the realistic styles? And so on and so forth.
So from there, just thinking about, I guess, the end product, how do you, because you're, it's a mural, it's something that's painted, that's like handmade, how do you kind of show that mock-up, or how do you show the
How do you scale it?
Yeah, or how do you show the vision and they approve it, and then does it look exactly like what they approved? Like,
so you're hiring us on the basis that we can accurately replicate the A4 piece of paper that you give us as the final artwork. And so when I talk a little bit about the traditional methods of our of the way we approach things, we actually have a whole process on how to get it from an A4 sheet of paper to a mural that could be as big as 28 meters long by 4 meters tall. So how we do that is every, when we get that final artwork, that's digitally line drawn. So we just, we trace the whole thing. That gets sent to what are called pounce machines. And these pounce machines are old school vinyl cutters. And basically what used to run vinyl sheets through, and we actually run this pounce paper. And it basically pokes holes of the digitally line drawn file that we send. So it pokes those holes in it. We take those pieces of paper, slam them on the wall, hit them with the chalk, spray it with hairspray. And it keeps that mark on it on the wall. And then basically what you've got is this super complex paint by numbers on the wall.
That's amazing.
And then so we print out these references for these guys, and they just look at it, paint it, look at it, paint it. And that's how they do it.
How long have you been kind of doing that as a 9-to-5 media sales and
being in the industry? Sales and marketing, I graduated university with. That was my background. But with this company in particular, I've been working with them for 3 years.
And I sense there's a bit of passion. Like, you, it seems like you really fuck with the art. Like, you really like it.
Well, I was working for a TV production company before this with Luke's younger brother, Simon. Big shout out to Simon.
Of course. Episode one, we're drinking some of his beers right now, actually.
Shout out to you, bro. Si.
You're a good man. Club. So we worked on a TV production company before that, but when we decided, well, when I decided to leave, this job came up, and I just thought to myself, like, this is the perfect medium for me, loving the sales and marketing side of things, but also loving the art of things as well. I think the first time I even saw them, I was just in Melbourne Central. And I just saw this massive mural. I'm like, oh my goodness, this is crazy. And I jumped on Seek not too long thereafter, and there was a position open. And they were looking for somebody who already had like 3 years media experience and all this. And I literally just sent off my email, followed up, and I said, look, guys, I don't have any experience whatsoever with regards to being in the media game. But I made the company that I worked with a ton of money. So I can do the same for you. They're like, oh, why don't you come in for an interview? I'm like, all right, cool. You let me know, I'll come in.
That's cool, man.
And I guess the cool thing is that art style. So thinking about like transitioning from a 9-to-5 media agency to where you are now, like thinking about that art style and then the side hustle, they kind of go hand in hand. So in a way, you've kind of been the best of both worlds, building connections and stuff through this job to like empower that side hustle a bit more and the visuals of that side hustle.
I was definitely going to tap into that segue. That was a deliberate question in terms of your passion about the art. You know, how does that transition in your passion, that fire in you to produce and make what you make?
I think the biggest lessons that I've learned from working with Apparition Media is they highly respect the arts. Mm. They respect the street scene about it. But another thing is that they know, most importantly, how to respect an artist's own personal craft, albeit that they're working for global clients. Mm. There's a stigma with street artists that working for global clients is like working for the man.
It's like selling out.
Yeah.
You can argue both sides, but it's, in my opinion, it's so, so stupid because of the fact that you are literally in the government's eyes, vandalizing property for the sake of what? Running the risk of going to jail.
Yep.
Or you have an opportunity here to be honing in on your skills and getting better at your skills daily and getting paid to do it.
Paid
and getting
for it legitimately.
And the recognition as well.
And here's the thing, right? Is that there's 24 hours in a day. You worked 8 of those hours. Who's to say that you, for the other 8 hours, can't be working on your own personal craft?
That's very true.
You can be funding your gallery events. Mm-hmm. You can be funding your collaborations. Mm-hmm. Mm. You can hit us up and we can help you in painting your murals.
It's almost on the contrary. It's a dream.
Super beneficial. But you know, when you got ego involved and people, they want to respect the street scene. It's like, it's in my opinion, it's really annoying, but yep. I understand. I don't agree with, but I understand where that other side's coming from. Yep. And so what that translates for me is that, you know, as I grow my own brand in musicianship, if opportunities for me to produce music for commercials, or just the commercial sector in general, if those opportunities come up, you jump at them because it's money in the bank and they pay way more than mom definitely. And dad who want a mural and, you know, in their backyard or something.
Yep.
You take those opportunities where those global clients are willing to pay you because they respect what you do and you run with it.
For sure. Take us back on when you started getting involved with music. At which age your ear start flaring up and you started hearing sound waves coming through, and which type of music kind of you started off being mostly attracted to?
How did that make you feel as well, I guess?
Yeah, totally. I attribute me starting producing and then recording. I started producing first, just doing like remixes and just getting my hands on like really shitty acapellas on YouTube and just building beats on those when I was in first year uni. So I was 17. Yep. And at that time, the reason why I was doing it was because I love listening to this one producer by the name of Alchemist, DJ Alchemist.
Oh yeah. He's dope.
Yeah. So his beats to me were just like absolutely fire. I just love the way he flipped old school samples. So I jump on YouTube and find old school samples. And then I worked my way through Fruity Loops or FL Studios at the time and started cutting up samples and trying to just be like him.
Yeah.
And then being in uni, especially in North America and in Canada, like when you're in first year, you live in a dorm and there may be 6 or 7 floors in your dorm.
Yep.
And there's thousands of kids in your I guess dorms really, right? In those buildings. And so each floor you kind of you like it's your friends, it's your family, it's who you're living next to, right?
Yep.
And so in between, let's say every 10 to 20 rooms, there would be what they call an alcove. And so there would be a couple lunch tables set up and we would literally just, after all these records that I would cut up, I'd just put them in sets that I would DJ for the kids, for all of us. And we would just drink and have parties in our alcove.
Was this every weekend or kind of after hours?
It was like every day, man.
Okay.
And then was your floor like the floor? People would come to your...
I don't know. Look, I can be like, oh yeah, our floor was so sick. Our floor was the best. No, I think everybody was doing it, but like... me and my roommate were just the guys who would bring out the lunch tables, set up the speakers, you know, the little Bluetooth speakers. You know,
sounds like a Rick Rubin type thing.
It is.
You know?
It is in the sense that it's so organic. Like we just did it because people want to hear music. And so I had virtual DJ, Fruity Loops, and I'd like, you know, bounce out these tracks or export these tracks and put them into my sets and just like gauge the room and check out who's vibing with this. You know, and that was the thing. I just see people loving it and smiling and having a great time and mix it with some drinks and beautiful people. And like, it's addictive.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, this is my jam. I love it.
Which university did you go to?
University of Guelph. So it's about 45 minutes west of Toronto.
Okay.
And this, and what were you doing at uni?
I studied marketing management.
Yeah, awesome.
Fantastic school, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so you're 17 years old. You're mixing acapellas with kind of beats that you've come across and you're sampling and kind of, you know, merging those together. At which point did you start slowly kind of discovering your own identity and your own sound in music and that transition from being a producer to an artist?
All right, so I'm 29 now.
Yeah, wow.
I was 17 at the time and just figuring out my sound probably about the last 2 years.
Wow, wow.
Yeah.
That's a bit of a process, huh?
Yeah, it's the biggest challenge for any artist because you love... If you love music, you love an artist not only just for their sound, but based on what they're speaking about and their tone.
Mm.
Mm.
And it really comes down to them discovering, you know, from the basics or the basics of just what pitch are they rapping or singing on a song or what key do they work best in?
Definitely.
Those are all, they go hand in hand with an artist and their sound.
Mm-hmm.
So is that cadence? Is that what that is?
Cadence would be your beats per minute.
Okay.
But your, that'd be the rhythm section of music. Your harmonies and melodies, that would be like the key. The key is your signature. So that's what note or bass or root note that you would perhaps be singing in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, let's say Ariana Grande, she kills the falsettos, but she may be in like, her key may be like an E minor or something. She might love writing music in E minor.
Mm.
And you don't realize it, but let's just say, 60% of her music is in the key of E minor,
which is her safety zone.
It's just where she just loves to write.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, like if you look at a basketball player, maybe Steph Curry, he's synonymous with three pointers. That's his signature.
Yep.
And that could be the same for musicians.
I see. So is that why like some, cause I think like some artists are like perfect to run to, for example, soccer when you're like running kind of thing. And is that because they're hitting that sort of whatever tone they hit, it's like suited for like going for a run, I guess, compared to like
that'll come down to the rhythm.
Yeah.
But where they feel most comfortable with their own voice as an instrument may be in that particular range.
Yeah. 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 Range. Well, I'm all about the lyrics. Like I only really listen to lyricists. So yeah, I'm running to the lyrics, I guess, rather than the beat.
And it's, that's very strange. I'm interesting. The opposite.
Yeah.
I'm the opposite.
No, like I hear
I'm a beat
like,
man.
Yeah.
No, I hear that phrase and like I know it's coming. And as I'm running, it's like he's about to say it. He's about to say it. And
that's
he says
crazy.
It and
who are you listening to? Because you're Pusha T. Like you and I are hardcore into Pusha T. But who have you been listening to lately?
Lately, I've been listening to Saba.
Okay.
He says some real stuff.
Yeah.
Lately, I've just been like on shuffle lately. But there's like if I think about my hype playlist, which is all for running, it's all lyricists. It's all like Outkast and...
What about the Royce, what's his name?
Royce,
yeah. That's your guy.
I nearly vomited the other day. I was running so fast. He went
double time on you and you tried to keep up.
Yeah, it's crazy. But it's interesting that you did the marketing major as well, because do you find that sort of helps with like the progression of your music as well, of how you, even thinking about those dorm room parties, like were you kind of factoring in the skills you were learning into bringing people into these like alcoves?
I always found that university is not for everybody, but university, regardless if you're a specialist or not, really helps you think a certain way, depending on what course you're taking. I found with marketing management, I started to see the world in a different way from a marketing perspective. So that's what I took out of it the most. Like the homework and all the exams and stuff, the whole system is super mundane to me.
Yep.
But by the end of it, I took out that A, networking is amazing, and B, that everybody's selling themselves in some shape or form.
100%.
Yeah.
And those are the two things that I realized from uni.
Yeah, awesome.
Failed a few courses, but I got there in the end.
Yeah. I took the same exact course in Auckland, New Zealand. Absolutely hate university. Did the bare minimum, but similar to you, I picked out things that mattered to where I was going, you know, for my next chapter, and kind of dished all the other mundane shit because I was just, you know, I was being selfish with it and just getting C averages just to kind of get through. But I totally get what you mean in terms of allowing you to think a certain way. But also, if you're savvy enough, you'll selfishly pick out certain things to put in your toolkit.
That's really interesting because I was complete opposite. Like back then, I didn't understand the importance of networking and like the the network that I could have created when I was at uni. Mm. And I was more on the HD side, just like trying to kill every project.
Mm.
And it's not until now, like probably same sort of thing, like 3 years ago, where I really realized how important that network is. I'm starting to build that now.
Yep.
But it's interesting that it's like opposite sides.
Mm. Going back to what you were saying, that only 2 years ago you started really honing in on your sound. Can you describe that for us and kind of who inspires you as part of that process? Like, how did you get there?
I think the biggest inspiration comes from trial and error.
Mm.
Definitely. When you start to put out music, or when you start to put out a product in general, you get feedback directly from the consumer or the fans. And you just figure out what resonates with people and what they expect from you. It's a good thing to be put in a box in this case, because you want to have a consistent sound, as an example. People want to expect something and look forward to something, especially if you're new and you're on the come up. People want to see you do a certain style. So when I mean that I've been kind of finding my sound the past couple of years, that's when I dropped the project Astro.
Mm-hmm.
And the first project that I dropped was more of release therapy for me. Mm-hmm. It's more of a, oh my goodness, I'm actually going to do this. I'm going to be like under scrutiny.
Yeah.
Put the track out, or put the album out. And you just look back at it now, you just laugh. You're like, shit, man, that was so, I'm so glad I got that out of my system, because it was trash, but I'm happy I did it.
Yeah.
The next project, it was a year and a half in between. So I really spent my time honing in my craft from a mixing, mastering standpoint, from an engineering standpoint.
Yeah.
And then still producing all my own records and recording myself by myself.
Oh, so you're producing and recording.
Produce, record, everything. Engineer.
Yeah, wow.
And write as well.
And write, of course.
Yeah.
And you're also self-taught. You haven't taken a music course or anything.
No, YouTube is my music school.
That is amazing, man. That's amazing. Props to you.
So the thing is that when I put that album out, I was starting to go in this direction of kind of upbeat hip-hop / rap. It was like feel good hip hop and rap. Mm. It wasn't about attitude. It wasn't about the struggle. It was just about feeling good, but to hip hop.
Mm.
Yeah.
And that really resonated with people.
Mm.
And then I started putting out some records that were a bit more dance or new disco. And that was resonating with people. And
but
so
still on the hip hop kind of end, or a bit more on the pop?
Well,
how'd you describe it?
Well, this is funny because I've put out records that are both, they're no question pop.
Mm.
I did a track called Rendezvous with Haley Teal.
Oh yeah, cool.
And it was really pop.
Yeah.
And just didn't do very well.
Mm, interesting.
But trial and error.
Yeah.
It's great to put the record out. And then I've done records where I've gone really hip hop, but still feel good, like Nothing to Lose.
Yep.
With Mans of the Legend on it. He's another rapper from Melbourne.
Cool.
And that song took me to LA, where I ended up winning a $50,000 US competition and a 20 city tour.
That's amazing.
Wow.
So that resonates with people.
That's a huge achievement, dude.
Yeah.
It was great. A great opportunity.
What does that tour sort of feel like? Like, were you with anyone on the tour? Like, what was the...
That was crazy, man. That's... So last year, the track came out, October. The first show after was online competition. I got sent a DM on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
My friend goes, you should do this. And I look it up. It looks like... I'm not going to lie, it looked relatively sketchy. And I'm like, all right, well, I've got nothing to lose, pun intended.
Mm.
It's $150. You get 50 tickets you can sell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's coming in November. So the track just came out. I'm like, perfect. I'll do a show. Cost me $150. I can sell 50 tickets at, $10 each or something. Cover my costs.
Yeah.
Make a little coin.
Easy.
Sold the tickets out in the first day.
It was dope.
Everyone wants to support the boy. And I'm like, good, great people around me.
That's awesome, man.
We perform, we rock it. And this competition there was 20 artists on the night. Maybe more. And then there were three judges. By the end of the night, they decided who was going to go for a chance to go to the finals to compete.
Mm-hmm.
So I won it in Melbourne. And then the following September, so about 10 months later, finals are in LA. It's me against 105 people from the UK, Canada, America.
Wow.
And me from Australia. And another guy in Sydney named Yendori.
But were you representing Australia or Canada?
I was representing Australia. Of course. Australia, we'll get into that one later. Definitely Australia.
Yeah, cool.
And I was against 105 people in the night. I went across two nights. It was long and it was exhausting. But I had one song, 3 minutes, 15 seconds to perform.
Mm-hmm.
That was my chance.
Mm.
And we rocked it, man. We absolutely rocked it on the Saturday night. And then
you say we, who else was?
I just say we, like, I'm just an inclusive kind of guy.
Yeah.
I rocked it. It was all me. It's like, nah, I got
that's very Canadian of you.
I guess.
Yeah. Nice, man.
I went, I flew there by myself.
Yep.
My cousin met me when I was in LA. He came to support. I was there, on the Saturday night, rocked it. I felt all right. I'm like, I don't know, was that a $50,000 performance? God knows. What do you know in 3 minutes, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right, I hope for the best. Anyways, the next night, I got a call back to perform again.
Amazing.
And then unbeknownst to me, the people that got called back were the top five finalists.
Wow.
So at this point, they're like, all right, first up is Jordan Ashra. And I'm like, oh, shit. I'm telling you, I'm like, if this guy says my name, I'm so ready. And literally says my name. So I just jump right back on stage. I'm like, okay, you didn't know what a $50,000 performance looked like the night before, but tonight you need to make it very clear to yourself that you know what that looks like.
You knew that 50K was on the line.
Yeah, well, I knew the whole time, but like when you just go out there against 60 people in a night, what the hell do you know?
Sure.
But now I guess you knew what you did the night before, so you knew you had to top that.
I just watched it's like watching the game tape. You just watch it back, you reflect, you're like, okay, what could I have done better? I guess I could have been more energetic here. Maybe I could have been engaging with the left side of the crowd.
Yeah, okay.
But that second performance, I kid you not, like it was a slow motion thing. I was thinking of the next lyrics. I was looking at the crowd. Killed I was engaging it. With people. And I just felt like I can safely say, no matter what happens at the end of the night, I did my best. Super happy with whatever happens. And then I went first, the next four people go. And then, you know, this is 45 performances later. Everybody wants to just get out of there. And then finally the guy comes up. He's like, he just basically said, you know, really appreciate everybody for coming out. You've come from, you know, all over the world. You've come from the UK, from Canada, from all across the States and from Australia, but there can only be one winner. And I just went quiet. He's like, and the winner is Jordan Ashra. And I was just like, whoa, shit. I had nothing to say. I just walked up to the stage.
Were you emotional?
I was in shock. Complete shock.
Yeah, you're just
and
numb.
People are just looking at me. There's lights on me.
Yeah.
I'm walking up to the stage in like utter disbelief. And I'm thinking, I'm in LA, man. I'm like so out of my element. Mm. I don't know anybody here.
Mm.
And I just feel like I'm going to get shot or some shit. This is too intense. But then all of a sudden, they hand me this novel check, like a novelty check, the massive one.
Yeah, the massive
check.
One.
And I'm looking at it. And I'm just like, nah, you know what? You deserve this. You got to own this moment right now.
Yeah,
like you took the win. You got to act like a champion. So I just held it above my head. I'm like, yeah, that's me. And I was just wilding out after that. And then,
that's amazing for someone from Australia to win a competition in LA.
Nuts. So I've got a quick question just about that slow motion part when you were performing for the second time in the second night. So it wasn't really until we saw J. Cole a couple of years ago. So you know how everyone's like, oh, J. Cole's got like a cult following and that sort of stuff. And like I've been a fan from the beginning. I never really felt the cultness until I saw him perform and I could feel the energy. And he was sort of talking about how he's feeding off the crowd's energy and that's why it's coming back. And I really felt it in that moment. And so from being on the stage, like, what does that feel like? Like, what's that, when it's happening and you just got this crowd of people in front of you, like, how does that feel?
You got to talk about the 10 minutes before you jump on stage, because like, that's so important.
Okay.
The 10 minutes before stage, in my head, personally, I'm thinking, am I going to forget my own lyrics? I've written them, recorded them a million times. Am I going to forget them? Mm. Or what am I going to be like on stage? But the minute you step on stage, I'm telling you, it's like
game time.
Yeah, it's game time. You just warmed up without even realizing it, and you're just totally in the zone.
Mm.
But when you're on the stage, it's so true. It's so important for fans or to work off of their energy. It's a real thing. You can feel it in the air. It's just, you know, even I can bet that someone like J. Cole in front of 10,000 people in a sold out stadium, he's still looking for eyes to make contact with.
Absolutely.
He's not just in his head looking at the lights. I guarantee he's trying to catch people singing his lyrics.
Yep. So that's how you get the energy? Like that's where you get it from? So
absolutely, man. When I do a show as a hip hop artist, a lot of the stigma is that a hip hop artist will literally just rap over their beats.
Yeah.
And sometimes they leave the whole a cappella in it and they're just rapping over their tracks.
Mm.
I wanted to break that stigma by getting a drummer backing tracks, guitarist, bass guitar player, keys, backing vocalist. I want to do it as a show.
Yeah.
So whether or not you know me is irrelevant. I want you to leave the show feeling electrified. It's all about feeling electrified. And that's just the energy that we share.
Nice.
I'm on stage, I'm rocking it, I'm putting it all on the line. But I just want you to smile and have fun, especially if you're paying.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It reminds you of like a Tiny Desk. I saw the Tech N9ne one recently. And it's interesting how you look at the way he breaks down his songs. And it's like he made it for to be performed.
It's a presentation.
So the song, the recorded song is just like the recorded song, but it was actually made for the performance. It's really cool to see that difference.
As a, you just called yourself a hip hop artist, and you mentioned a couple of stigmas. One of the other stigmas is that people just have this perception, people who aren't into hip hop, people are just indifferent, but may listen to hip hop every now and then. They do have this stigma of hip hop artists are quite arrogant, you know, they're show offy type thing. You seem fairly humble. I mean, I'm a hip hop head, so don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say anything else, but you seem quite humbled. You seem quite grounded. You've made some serious moves in the industry. How do you keep that level of being humble, of being grounded? Is that like something that you kind of grew up with? Have you gone through any experiences? You know, if you could just talk us through that a little bit.
Well, one, I'm Canadian, so that helps.
Definitely.
No, in all seriousness, I'm just not interested in being a celebrity, really. I don't think just because you make millions of dollars and you're in the public eye, it makes you any better than anybody else. And I truly believe that, as cliche as that may sound, that's just the reality of it. I just happened to choose my career of being a musician and artist. That's just the career path I chose. But that doesn't, I could be saving lives through my lyrics and music, but I'm not saving lives. You know what I mean? Like that's a respectable career. That's celebrity status, you know, for all the people out there that are working hard, actually rescuing people or rehabilitating people and dramatically changing families and lives. Like, those are real celebrities in my opinion. And to be an artist who gets notoriety and may feed off fame as an example, it doesn't mean that I have the right to be arrogant to somebody. I just don't think that's, I don't know, it's just not in my vocabulary, really.
Definitely. Well said, for sure, man. Being music is your number one kind of career choice. Did you grow up with any musicians around in your family?
Yeah, my mom was a piano teacher. She grew up playing piano, classic piano, and she was a piano teacher when I was growing up.
Yeah.
And I'm so dumb, man.
You never learned? Oh, dude.
Listened. That was my learning. I just listened.
You just listened to that.
I loved it.
Okay. So you stuck around and you listened to your mom kind of jam the keys.
I think the problem was, and I don't blame my mom for this because I understand.
Yeah.
She was forced to play piano 3 hours a day.
Yeah, wow.
Forced. Okay. Play, you have to practice. And she was fantastic, phenomenal. Yeah. But I think because of that, she didn't want to burden her kids with that. But in saying that, upon reflection now, I just wish she did. Music's a language. Reading sheet music is reading a language. Definitely. It's a language. It's a mathematics. It's so good for the brain.
Definitely.
It's phenomenal. It's like sometimes you need somebody cracking the whip, because when you've got freedom of choice as a kid, you just want to go out and skateboard and hang out with your friends and just girls. Yeah. And
for sure.
Smoke
for sure.
Weed, so.
Yeah, you need that discipline. But that discipline is only realized when you've gotten to an age and you're like, damn. 20 years has gone past.
Totally, man.
I only wish.
Hindsight's a beautiful thing, you know? The reality is that I totally get why she didn't do it.
Yep.
Why would I ever put that same sort of misery on my kids?
Exactly.
But then
exactly.
I guess there's a flip side of it is, who knows? Like, if you did learn back then, maybe you wouldn't like it now, because you might have just been like, why am I doing this? I want to go smoke weed and skate. Like, why am I, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
it
for
could
sure.
also be that side of it as well.
And also, you can really peg out a artist that has been classically trained, they really follow the rules. And I think the one advantage I have as somebody who's just self-taught is that you don't realize if you're breaking rules or not.
That's true.
You're just making music that sounds good to hear.
Yeah, that's same thing with actors. You can totally see who's been classically trained and who's kind of just freestyling it and giving you a very natural performance.
Who can get into character the best, really, right?
Exactly.
But the classically trained actors do have longevity, though.
Well, that's subjective. That's a debate on its own, I think. Like, doing theater and then going behind the screen, you can still tell. Like, for example, Hugh Jackman. My mom loves Hugh Jackman. You can tell he's been classically trained.
He loves theater, doesn't he?
He loves theater.
You need to bring
in
an actor.
Theater.
But actually, that's a bad example, because when he's X-Men, you can't really see that classic thing. But
I guess
when he does the romantic kind of roles, when he tags that on, you're like, cool, you can see that.
Wasn't he in Les Mis?
Yeah, he was.
It's right up his alley, right?
Yeah, but I don't really watch that sort of stuff anyways. Like, I'm more indie, so like they're classically trained. Like, they just kill that stuff for me.
Yeah.
And that's all I really watch.
Bring in an actor. Ask the question.
We need to.
True.
We definitely need to.
True. I have a question, sorry, just before you go. Just going back a little bit. So we got into the, 2 years ago, finding your sound and sort of a bit of the process that took you there. In the moment when, was there a moment when you realized your sound, and how did that feel?
I don't think I can pinpoint on one part, but I just think it's a process.
Mm.
You just start to realize sonically what works and what doesn't.
Yep.
You just start to, I think, if you're not a music head, when you hear a song that you like, you just accept the fact that you like the song.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's a beautiful thing, because you don't need to fully understand why you like the song. You just like it.
Yeah.
But from a producer's side, or from a producer's eye, it's hours upon hours of listening to millions of sounds and figuring out which ones work.
Mm-hmm.
And also determining the richness of a sound. And that's a huge thing that people may or may not know. But finding the richness of a sound, and how bold it is, and how it actually resonates with your own body, its vibrations, its frequency range, all that stuff matters on a super complex standpoint. And finding sounds that sound rich is something that people unanimously just enjoy.
Gravitate towards.
Yeah, well, so with that in mind, what comes first for you? The production and like the beat, or the words?
Drums, always drums. I start with drums.
Mm. Okay.
I'm a big fan of rhythm. Everybody moves to rhythm. You don't have to know what language someone's speaking with. If that thing moves, you move.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's just how it works. We just move to rhythm.
Mm.
You know, that comes first, rhythm first for me. Then I'll jump on the keys. I'll just work something out, create some chords on the fly.
Yeah.
The chords determine the mood, the emotion. Minor chords generally are related to sad. Major chords are generally related to happy. Mm. A nice medium might be jazz chords, adding additional notes in there as well. Mm-hmm. Can create mystique, can create charm, can create maybe, like even mystery.
Yep.
There's elements that change, what you're creating.
Yeah, that's interesting the way you describe that, because then it kind of becomes clear that as you're creating this thing, you can start to be creating the subject matter or the topic that you're about to write to, type thing.
Mm. If that song makes me feel like this is 007 danger shit, you want to write something that's, that's classy, but at the same token, like, don't mess with me.
Yeah,
it could be a track like that.
Yeah.
Or if there's something that's just making you feel really good, you might feel like, hey, this song reminds me of that I'm on top of the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then before you know it, you're writing a song about the reasons why it makes you feel like you're on top of the world.
Yeah.
Drake, there was a great interview with Drake where he said he treats his writing like an essay.
Right.
The chorus is the thesis, the statement.
Mm.
His verses are the body paragraphs as to why his thesis is correct.
So proving it, type thing.
That's right.
Backing it, yeah.
So how does that work for you? So you kind of explain the process of like drums, then keys, and then the different like melodies, I guess. And then when it comes to writing, what does that look like?
I think writing is still, I love writing choruses, but I think writing for verses for me is probably my weakest trait. I'm still, because it's such an important part that you got to have a reason to drive to the chorus.
Yep.
So that's something that I'm constantly working on. And for me, it's just the more writing you do is just practice. It's
definitely,
the brain is a muscle. You just got to keep practicing and
approach
for sure. It. But for an artist, that's pretty brave to admit.
Oh, totally.
Totally.
Is that you still got a hill to climb and you're not there yet, and you're still crafting on your skills. Where are you right now with your music? So in terms of projects, albums, songs.
So next project's coming out at the end of the year. And this really comes back to what we've been kind of dancing around is, what genres do I really do in your sound? And it's still a part of the discovery process, but I find myself really in love with doing new disco. That's the Jamiroquai kind of style.
Yep.
Yeah.
Even you see artists like Dua Lipa and Bruno Mars touching on disco. even The Weeknd's touching on the 80s as an example.
Exactly.
So I love doing this new disco vibe.
Yeah.
But I also love just the straight rhythm of hip hop,
mm-hmm.
the low end, the 808s, mm-hmm. you know, and the drums that knock. Love that. And so I found myself doing both. And in my opinion,
and mixing them or
doing everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm stuck in these two genres.
Okay.
And if that was a tree, the branches to those might be for new disco might be pop.
Yep.
For hip hop, it might be rap. It might be what you consider trap.
Yep.
So I'm finding myself doing both. And I just thought to myself, well, if I'm doing both and I need to get, and I personally want to get a project out,
mm-hmm.
then why can't I do both? And what does that, how does that represent it?
True.
And the first thing that I thought of was an hourglass. So you take an hourglass, half an hour on one side, and mm-hmm. you flip it.
Yep.
And that was, this has been now the concept of the project.
Yeah,
so that's my concept, and I'm just adhering to it. So making a bunch of new disco pop records, and then you're going to listen to it, and you're going to be like, wow, this is sick. And then all of a sudden, it's just going to flip on its head. And the transition for me, my middle ground is jazz and R&B. So going from this happy, feel-good music of disco, four to the floor, just stomping beats. And then R&B kind of just slows down time, a little bit of R&B. And then before you know it, you're going into the hard stuff again with some great hip-hop.
Yeah, nice.
So that's where the project's going.
That's a really cool way of explaining it. And I think it's quite exciting because you've explained something, you're just like, cool, this is what feels good to me, and this is what I'm going to produce and put out. I'm not following any rules. I'm not following any guidelines. You know, it's just what feels good, and whoever messes with it, great. Whoever doesn't, then I'm not for them.
Yeah, that's
it
right.
It is what it is.
That would be hard. I feel like that would be hard to get like, to the point you are now of explaining it would take time, I feel like. Like, it sounds simple, but I feel like that would be a bit of work.
I think the toughest challenge with it personally is just the fact that, like I said at the beginning of this interview, is that, you know, your fans in most cases want you in a box. They want to expect a particular sound from you because that's why they first loved you or gravitated towards you, was because of the sound that you put out.
Yep.
So the challenge has been, well, how do I resonate with what could be essentially two different, totally different demographics?
Mm-hmm.
How do you resonate with that? And how do you not lose your fan base? And in fact, how do you grow your fan base?
Well, I guess I guess that's the key word there, the growth. Like, if you think about over the past like 2 years, you would have seen a massive growth in your skills, yourself, like your whole, like everything. And so would those fans, I assume. So there would probably be some that expect a certain sound and would drop off, but there would be others that would grow with you, I would imagine.
On the journey, yep.
Like Absol is a great example of that, I find. Like I struggle to listen to his first stuff. Even though
I struggle to listen to Absol since the beginning of time. I can't do it.
No,
the dude is too weird for me.
No, I've listened to him from the start, and like his first stuff I loved back then, but I've grown. It's like we've grown together, and now I'm just like up on his new stuff. Like
it's can't do Absol.
That's the beauty of it though. That's the beauty of
it. Yeah, I've dropped off, but you keep going.
100%.
Well, music is mad subjective. So I mean,
exactly.
I've got no idea what I'm doing, but we're poking and prodding. We're just trying to figure it out.
It feels good. People are giving me feedback. That's what's up.
People are listening, man.
Yeah. So what we've done so far is obviously we've covered your 9 to 5 that you're super passionate about. We've covered your ultimate passion, which is music. What we want to know is how do you balance out the two? How do you go to a full day's work and then come back home or spend the weekends crafting and honing in on your music? What does that process look like? And what are some of the kind of struggles and challenges you face?
Show up. That's it. Show up. You can't make any excuses. If you're serious about what you're doing, then you're going to find a reason to be obsessed with it. Just show up. It's that simple. If you love something, you have to be prepared to face any sort of challenges that come your way. Believing in a higher power or not, you have to have faith in what you're doing, and you have to believe that you have the abilities to create a product, a song that is going to resonate with enough people to sustain your life, and you have an opportunity to make an impact to them. So for me, you know, the first thing I did, I work with these boys at Apparition as of last year, 4 days a week.
Okay.
Which is great. But I decided to show up an hour early for work so that I can leave an hour early. They're not necessarily a 9 to 5 types of people. They're results driven.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like companies should be these days.
Yep.
Totally.
And what that means for me is that as long as I'm doing my bit and, you know, I'm returning their investment, they're happy. So if I request to go down to 4 days a week, it was never an issue. It was, yep, we support what you're doing. Go for it. Mm. That's the type of company you want to be working for.
Yeah,
if
definitely.
You're working for somebody. Mm. And then as soon as I get home, I have dinner with my wife. I spend time with her. That's what the weekends are for. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. the rest of the time, man, you know where to find me, in my studio. That's it.
You've got a home studio?
Yep.
Yep.
Definitely. So do you produce for people as well? Or
just myself
else,
at the moment. I've done some production, but as for paid gigs, no.
Yep.
Yeah.
With music, as like any other kind of creative outlet, you are going to have some blockers, and you're going to have some days where you're just like, fuck, the last thing I want to do is be in the studio and do that. How do you kind of overcome those hurdles and those challenges? Because my wife and I, we design fashion together, women's fashion. And from time to time, we get those blockers where it's just like, the pattern doesn't make sense. This look doesn't make sense with that. We can't shoot it together, you know? And sometimes it's just like, hey, we want to just shove that shit aside, yep. have a breather, and then come back in. How do you kind of deal with that?
I can't remember what her name was, but she had a great point, is that if you're in a creative field of any sorts, or if that's your passion or dream, and you get what they call writer's block, as an example, right? The best advice, and this was from her, and hopefully I can get the name, but she just said, do something else that's creative as a replacement. Keep that part of the brain firing, but just do something else. Mm. So for me, that might be just working on my car, aesthetically changing it.
What sort of car have you got?
Saab 9-3, 2001, 2-liter turbo, baby.
Oh, okay. I wasn't expecting that, but all
Jerry
right.
Jerry Seinfeld, he used to drive the 900 SE.
Yeah.
This is a side topic. He drove the 900 turbo and then the 900 SE.
Yeah.
I got the next generation.
Oh, cool.
So I'm like a young Jerry Seinfeld.
Nice.
Yeah, you're going to have to send us a photo of that. We'll check it up in the show notes.
So, but like aesthetically speaking on the car, I just don't like your everyday car. As soon as I get a car, I want to do stuff. I want to change it.
Yep.
That's the creative side, just thinking, right? Mm. And for me, it's just, you know, lowering it, working on the car mechanically, learning a new skill, taking the wheels off, painting the wheels, don't like the color, change it again. Mm. You know, working on the car for me is a creative therapy as well. Sometimes I'll just sit there and just draw.
Yeah.
Why not? I've always, as a kid, always drawn. I've just always drawn, and nothing crazy, nothing incredible, but
anything
again,
in particular that you gravitate towards in terms of drawing?
Hentai.
What's that?
I have no idea. It's like an anime porn.
Oh, is it?
Okay. Nah. I love drawing typography.
Okay.
I love drawing logos.
Oh yeah.
Sim was telling me a logo. I was on the phone with Simon Ferrugia, Luke's brother, and he was telling me about his business idea. And just while we're on the phone, I got my pen and pad out. Just drawing him logos. I'm like, what are the letters again? He's like, IMN. I'm like, okay, yeah. I'm like, tell me about the company. Like, are you more of like an aggressive company? Are you softer? And so that's
what dope.
It is.
That's cool.
And I'm totally happy with staying away from music for a week.
Yep.
Weekend, that's okay.
Yep.
But I'm doing something.
Yep.
And that's how I jump over those hurdles. And the next thing you know, like, let's say I'm just don't feel like producing.
Mm.
But I'll jump on some beats. Some people will send me some beats and I'll just write instead. And I'll record myself. I'll experiment with different types of modulations on my vocals.
Mm-hmm.
Just something. It doesn't necessarily have to be a regiment.
Sure.
So that's just how I break the mold for that.
No, that definitely makes perfect sense. I could definitely relate to that. When I've got quote unquote writer's block, I'd definitely go away and do something that's still going to stimulate me, but
totally
not add to the blockage. You know, it's still going to enhance it. So when I come back to whatever problem I was facing, the floodgates are open. I'm like, cool, I'm back on this shit now. You know, it makes perfect sense.
That's a really interesting way to put it, because I don't do that. I figure out a way to shut my brain down. But that
by watching The Real Housewives.
Oh yeah, just watching trash TV. But that
I ain't judging.
But this makes a lot of sense. Like, because there are other creative things that we could be doing. I'm gonna try that.
Creatively speaking, it can be you hitting the gym. Such a good relief for the mind to just release stress, release anxiety,
definitely
release an overworked brain at the office.
I couldn't agree more.
Sometimes you just gotta go for a run, just go for a cruise, or just walk with your partner.
Yeah,
just or walk solo. Or if you're not in the music field, put on some music, or put on a podcast and just walk. You know, do something that you just wouldn't expect yourself to do, or if it even if it's, if you know it's a release therapy for you, just do it.
Yep.
Mm.
And just refresh. Mm. You know, just that's it.
Given that you've got these two things happening in parallel, your 9 to 5 and your music, do you have a plan to transition to the music side full time at some point?
100%.
You know, have you got something kind of written down as a goal, or is it in your head? Kind of talk us through that a little bit.
The process for an artist getting out there is ultimately awareness.
Mm.
Even like any brand, it's about awareness. It's about finding your fans, finding your consumers.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the same. The formula is the same.
Yeah.
In the sense that you need to be consistent with your catalog. You need to be consistent with your product. You need to be consistently pushing it out. Because as long as you are consistently putting something out, mm-hmm. people will come and go.
Mm-hmm.
But yet you remain there. And that's the trajectory. And so mm-hmm. for an artist, it's kind of the same in the sense that you normally the trajectory would be you find yourself a manager, you find yourself a label, and then you start putting serious money behind yourself. And marketing.
Mm.
That's usually the formula of how any artist is a breakthrough.
Mm. Yeah.
Have you figured out your formula?
It's probably that. Okay. It's just about awareness. It's just listen to the music, yep. come yep. to my shows,
yep.
you know, share it. It's yep. before you guys know it, it's like you listen to one of my records, you go, oh damn. And you just share it on your Facebook. Mm. You have no idea where that's going to go.
Yep.
You for all I know, may know somebody in the industry that I'm in.
Mm.
Who's a manager who happens to be real good friends with a label head.
Sure.
And they go, yo, you got to check this guy out.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden I get a message. Are you signed? Are you a free agent? Mm-hmm. What's your deal? Mm-hmm. And then before you know, they go, come to our office.
Yep.
Let's talk.
Do you have a preference? Do you want to remain independent or do you want to go into the label route?
I want to remain independent of my intellectual property.
Yeah, your publishing and all that.
Masters. Yep. So the masters is where the original file is. Mm-hmm. What computer is it on?
Mm-hmm.
And the minute you put out a song, it's technically copyrighted because it's your intellectual property.
Yep.
You got to hang on to that.
Mm.
They always say it. If you ever know anything about the music industry, it's hang on to your publishing,
mm-hmm.
hang on to your masters. And it's just good business practice. You know?
So what's your publishing, just to break that down?
Publishing can be, it's multi-tiered, but the basics of it is when somebody pays you to use your music in some shape or form,
yep.
they're going to take a cut. Generally speaking. So if you offer a cut of your publishing, it's like you're offering a cut of your product.
Okay.
To an investor.
Mm.
So they'll pay you an upfront fee or they'll pay you in longevity. So for a song has longevity based on if Ford Motor Company called me and said, we want to put your song in the Ford commercial, they're going to ask, probably pay me a flat fee. And if the agency wants to get involved, they may say that we're going to pay you a flat fee.
Mm.
But in order to recoup that money, they want a percentage of it for as long as that song is around and getting pushed. So a company would do that because if that song gets picked up and ends up blowing up thanks to Ford, and that song is even on another car commercial company, they still get a percentage of it.
Yep.
Yeah.
So someone says, hang on to your publishing. If you can, take a nice fat chunk out of it. And if you are the one pitching, that might be an incentive for them to pick you up and say, hey, look, this record's a smash. Well, I'll offer you 5-10% of my publishing.
Yeah.
And they'll go, okay, yeah, cool. They put in the commercial, they pay you an upfront fee, they recoup their money, the song blows up, and they're laughing because they get a cut of whatever that song makes thereafter.
Exactly.
Is it the same as sampling as well? Like if I wanted to sample one of your beats, is that the same type of deal?
Sampling a record is based on actually paying for like a master buyout as an example.
Mm. Okay.
So you would pay for a percentage of for the right to use that song and flip it how you please.
Yep. Okay.
That's called sync licensing. So that's like a license, but you're basically paying. And then I would in turn say, all right, well, whatever you do with that record, I want a particular percentage, or I'll just take a flat fee or both.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. Awesome.
What I wanted to know is you mentioned earlier, you represented Australia at this competition and you said that you were going to talk to me about it later in terms of representing Canada, given that that's your, you know, your place of birth as opposed to Australia. And obviously these days it doesn't even matter because of technology and digital platforms and stuff. It doesn't matter where you're from. As long as you're producing some dope shit, people are going to listen to it. But does that mean anything to you, which country you represent as an artist?
It's one of the most asked questions that I get is, okay, oh, I notice an accent. Where are you from?
Mm.
It's always like, oh yeah, I'm from Canada. It's like, oh, so how long have you been in Australia? They go hand in hand.
Yeah.
They're just lead up questions anyways. Yeah. But I represented Australia at that time because my career started in Australia.
Sure.
And it made more sense. And it was actually more interesting. There was plenty of Canadians at this competition. I was one of two Australians.
Okay.
And that just adds to the excitement of the story of like, okay, let's hear what this guy's got.
For sure.
So I said when I was up on stage, I'm originally from Toronto, but I'm representing Australia.
Mm.
Because that's where I won the competition.
That's dope, yeah.
The final anyways.
That's how you got there, I guess.
And I love representing Australia because of the fact that my music started here and I feel like I was raised as a man, from a boy to a man, because I came here 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And what the hell do you know when you're 20? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So, you know, Jack, I was a kid when I came here straight up and I just kind of figured it out. But Australia really helped me understand what it means to be a family man, what it means to stand up for something, to be passionate about something and to put it all on the line.
Yeah.
What does that look like?
All that.
That's Australia, man.
Yeah. That's dope. I think we're looking at the time. We're starting to slowly wrap up, although it felt like we just started 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, right. So many more questions. But
we've got plenty of questions, man. I mean, obviously, Luke and I are hardcore hip-hop heads. We love our hip-hop, and getting you on this show was definitely one of the highlights. Like, cool, we've got a hip-hop... Well, it's probably unfair to call you a hip-hop musician because listening to your stuff on Instagram and some of the music that you've put out and previously, it does make sense now that you've described it. It's got that kind of 808 thing, but then it can go to disco and fun and hype, you know, just like you can't really put a finger on it, but irrespective, it doesn't take away from the excitement of having you here. What I wanted to know is, have you had any mentorship in this kind of music game? Have you looked up to someone and be like, cool, this is the blueprint I want to look at and kind of mimic? Or has it been multiple artists that you've gone, cool, I'll take a bit of here, a bit of there, a bit of there, and kind of make my own kind of sound from it?
I really, growing up, when I first started, like just even making records and stuff, I looked up to Alchemist because I just loved the way he produced. So I really studied him.
Yep.
But as a mentor, someone that I'd love to meet even to this day and still look up to is Pharrell.
Oh, yeah.
I admire Pharrell because he started off as a producer.
Mm-hmm.
Then caught up with Chad Hugo and created the Neptunes.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point in the early 2000s was consisting of over 40% of what the radio was his production.
Yeah.
And that's huge. So he started off as a producer.
Mm-hmm.
Then he moved his way into featuring on artist tracks, then became a breakout artist. And then now he's his own man doing scores, furniture, books, you name it, he's doing
linking
it.
Linking up with Chanel and creating an entire
whatever he wants to do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whatever he wants to do, he does it.
He's just the epitome of cool. You think of cool and it's just Pharrell Williams.
It's the dream, right?
And I appreciate that so much because he just was able to carve his own path. And, you know, he can be making songs like Happy, and then he can be making songs like Let's Get Blown or Hot in Here by Nelly.
Mm,
So he's all over the joint. And that's what's so diverse and awesome about him is that you just can't single him out on one thing. Like, no. What is he good at? No. Everything. So, I mean, I hope that he's as cool as what he seems, but from his blueprint, you just take pieces because everybody's story is so different and unique.
Definitely.
I'm not going in the same, I don't have the same opportunities as him. And I don't know the same people as he does. His story is him.
Mm.
And so I hope to, you know, get inspiration from him, but I'll carve my own path.
Yeah. Yeah. That's dope, man. You said you've got some new music coming out. Talk us through that a little bit.
Well, last Friday, May 22nd, we released Reasons, which featured Jalmar. That again is an ode to the early Jamiroquai days, but I end up singing and rapping on it.
Nice.
So that's the blend.
Cool.
And that record was lots of fun.
Where can someone find it?
You can find, just search Jordan Astra. Astra.
Yep.
Search it. You'll find it's on all platforms. We did an awesome music video with it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you can find it everywhere.
Awesome.
And the next record that we got, we're going to go back to hip hop.
Okay.
Hip hop and rap and a little R&B. I think I've decided in the past couple of days, we're going to release it on Canada Day.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just, you got to pay homage.
That would be pretty cool. Yeah.
And B, I think this is a good opportunity to release two tracks. I want to really experiment, and this is the poking and prodding type of approach.
Mm.
I just want to put out a 100% hip hop rap track and a 100% R&B song and see what my fans and what the new fans think.
Mm.
And if it flops, it flops. But if it blows up, then I know where I'm going.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, that's definitely. July 1st. Let's say it right here.
That's dope.
Publicly.
That's dope. Looking forward to it, man. Luke, before I forget anything, I know I'm going to ask about the plug. I'll make sure that Jordan gets his opportunity to plug, because I usually forget that.
Oma always forgets the plug. He always forgets, and we get to the end. It's like, oh, wait, remember to plug. But before that, I would really...
But before that, I wanted to see if you had any questions.
Oh, just well, not really a question. It's more of a statement, and they really didn't answer right now. But we're getting into season three next season. Mm-hmm. It would be cool to maybe collaborate on one of those 808 jazz fusions or something for the intro potentially. That would be...
I would be honored.
That would be amazing.
That would be dope. That's a really good idea.
Because all I can think about is Q-tip sort of vibes, and that's all I want.
Okay, damn. I can do that easy. I probably have a catalog I can just send you. You guys can just take your pick.
Nice. That would be amazing.
That would be awesome,
I've got
man.
This Google Drive file, a folder on my computer called The Library, and every instrumental that I've ever produced is just in it.
Yeah,
just based
wow.
on Drana. Send it to you. It's like 200 tracks in there. Take your pick.
That's amazing. Super cool, that'd man. Cool. Really Thank appreciate you. It. All right. Plug yourself, man.
Thank you to Brooklyn Lager for supplying the beer. Much appreciated. Thank you to the boys here for just having me here. Absolute honor. And I really appreciate what you guys are doing. This is the epitome of what a side hustle is. It's important that we, if we've got a passion, that we focus on it. As for me, man, check me out. Yep. It's all you got to just search Jordan Astra. And I'd appreciate if you guys have a listen. And if you like it, great. And if you don't, tell somebody you don't like it, because yeah. I appreciate that too.
definitely.
That's dope, man. That's dope. Your Instagram handle is?
WolfGangAstra.
Nice.
And honestly, on all socials, you can just search Jordan Astra and I'll pop up.
Dope. That's awesome, man. Yo, I couldn't thank you, I couldn't thank you more, man, for coming through. You've come straight from your 9 to 5 to join us here. I'm glad that cup of coffee got you through, even though it's probably a horrible cup of coffee.
Yeah, we won't name the brand of coffee, because we don't want any defamation cases.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm happy with it. Okay. I think this mug is great. You guys can see this mug. It's beautiful.
It's a pretty cool little mug.
It's
actually.
A very Fitzroy mug.
Nah, thank you guys, man. It's awesome. I love doing this kind of stuff, and awesome. You guys are doing a great job. Great questions, and I'm happy to be here.
Thanks a lot, man.
For coming along.
We're awesome. Definitely looking forward to launching this. This is going to be an exciting episode to share with our audience.
Looking forward to it.
Definitely.
Dope. Awesome.